Welcome to Section 9. My name's Damien Hull.
And I'm Dorothy. And today we're going to be talking about Ubuntu 18.04 desktop and some of our other projects. So right now you asked me to set up a virtual machine so I can actually start playing with Ubuntu 18.04, which they call Bionic Beaver.
Yeah, and they always have goofy names. And so there was like, there was something about a Bambi at one point or something. They always have these goofy names. But the first time I saw Bionic Beaver, I'm like, what's Bionic Beaver?
Yeah.
What is this, like some new superhero? Then I was like, oh, wait a minute. That's another Ubuntu distribution.
Right.
So yeah, you need to test this because what I want to know is, are you going to be able to use it if you upgrade from 16 to 18?
Well, one of the things when I started doing the research on that I came across, it says that you can go from 16 to 18, but not have 17 because the 1710 version of it, because that's not long-term support. So you couldn't upgrade it. If you upgrade the 16 to 1710, you couldn't then upgrade, you know, to 1804. So I thought, okay, so this is what was going through my mind. Do I just do a clean install on it and then have to save all my stuff, you know? And then I got to thinking, well, I don't have enough experience in Linux to know how to do a restore point like I do on Windows. You know, they usually go, click the box, restore point. And, you know, anytime that I, you know, put a new app or I update something, I always like to have a restore point in case something goes wrong so I can put it back in there. So one of the things that you're going to need to show me is how to do a restore point on Linux before I can do this, because I really do want to try to kind of do the upgrade.
Yeah, and Ubuntu, as far as I know, has nothing like the Windows restore point. So what we're going to do is we're going to back up your data. We may take a snapshot of your system using CloneZilla, and you have a couple options there. You can either back up to an external hard drive with CloneZilla, or we can just send that to our Synology disk station.
Okay.
And that's going to be a long process. So what we want to do is start that in the evening, and then we come back in the morning and check it. But these are good things because you want to always have a backup of your system before you do a major upgrade. Minor ones, I'm not too worried about, but major ones could potentially break something.
Right. And I think that if I just make my mistakes again, like I usually do for all my projects and my virtual machines, then by the time that I have my checklist, even I know it's not going to be perfect, but at least I'll be able to have made the bigger boo-boos on the virtual machine. So anyway, we are using, you had me use the VirtualBox?
You're using VirtualBox.
Okay.
And we created a checklist for that. And so we went into VirtualBox and we clicked new, and that brings up the wizard for creating a new virtual machine. So what are some of the things that it asked you?
Well, asked me to name the operating system, so I went ahead and did that. You insist always on having me do a minimum of two processors when I do that.
Yeah, so first of all, when you go through the wizard's just creating the new virtual machine, and then you have that new machine, and then you go into the settings. So the wizard for the new virtual machine is pretty straightforward. There's nothing in there that people can't figure out, and then the hard part is going into the settings for the new virtual machine.
Right, because they ask you about the processors. They ask you about RAM. They ask you about doing, if you want to do a virtual disk, if you want the memory to be dynamic. You know, they ask you all sorts of things in there.
Some of that's part of the wizard for creating the new virtual machine. So it's the thing that I find confusing about VirtualBox and virtualization in general is that the wizard's nice, and then you have a new virtual machine. But you still have to go into the hardware settings where it asks you, the two things that I look at all the time are, how many processors do I have and how much RAM is allocated to this particular system?
Right. Well, when I looked at the minimum requirements for 18.04, I kind of knew what I had to have minimum in there. But what we did is, like I said, you always have me set two processors because you keep saying that with one is kind of slow and sometimes it doesn't work right. So we did two. Then we did 8 gigs of RAM because my workstation has 32 gigs. So I can actually have the luxury to have something like that, which is more than what the minimum requirements are. Let's see, what else did we have to do?
That's pretty much it. Now, there are some network settings that we might want to change later on, but you're just testing a workstation, so the default settings are fine.
But here is the different things that I found really refreshing about playing with VirtualBox system when I was doing the installation. One of the things is that, you know, the guest editions.
So the guest editions are there to help your system run better because it's got the software to make it do what it's supposed to do.
Right. And most of the time, we had to go online, try to figure out which guest editions go with the virtual machine, you know, what you would get for this, that, and the other. In this particular incident, it was nice because it said, here is the guest editions that you need. Do you want to install them? You say yes. Okay, download them now. You know, run them, whatever it is that it tells you to do. The second thing I found really impressive was that usually when you're doing a virtual machine, your mouse gets frozen and then you have to do, you know, a combination of keys to make it do whatever it needs to do. This time it auto-detected the mouse. So it was like plug and play. It was really nice. And then also when we, you know, we had to do now the installation of Ubuntu 18.04. That was kind of interesting because when we downloaded it, one of the things that it asked is like, do you want like the mini version of it? Because like the big version has a lot of things in it. And we're like, no, we want the full version of that. So we went ahead and we installed it. And then what I liked was like, I have a really big monitor. So like the regular display of the Ubuntu, it took the whole monitor. And I thought that was really nice. But then when we went to full screen, which I thought I was on full screen, to be honest with you. But when you went ahead and click, oh, let's have full screen, things kind of fell off to where we couldn't click on them. They were like right below the line.
Well, what happened was the whole screen just went goofy.
Yeah.
And that's something to do with VirtualBox. That has nothing to do with Ubuntu. Something in VirtualBox is not set right, or we don't have something in there that's right. So we're going to have to go back and figure out why that happened. So you can get full screen. You should be able to get full screen.
Well, maybe we can play with the displays on VirtualBox.
We'll have to figure that out. We'll have to do some research on that.
Okay.
But talk about, you know, when you get ready to log in, talk about what you saw, because what I want to get from you is, can you use this? Is it similar enough to 16.04 that, you know, you're not going to be like, oh my God, what is this? Like when people went from Windows 7 to Windows 8, that was like so different. People were not sure what they were supposed to do.
You know, the only other version of Linux that I've ever seen has been Linux Mint. But I didn't really know anything about Linux, so I just seen it. And I kind of clicked around to see what it was. I was comfortable with the 16.04. I knew where things were, kind of, you know, with my limited knowledge of that, because I still feel I have a lot of to learn about Linux. In 18.04, it still had this strip on the side with the little icons. Okay. It did have a little thing for activities that you can click on.
One of the things that I find kind of interesting about 16.04 and some of the earlier versions is that they took away the list of applications you have. So instead of seeing like in Windows, you click on the start button and you get a list of all your applications. You don't have that in Ubuntu. So you have to type in what you want. You want the terminal window? You have to type in terminal. You want another application, like let's say, for example, you have Chrome installed and it's not on your little dock on the left-hand side. You have to type in Chrome. So these are things that people had to get used to, and people complained. When Unity came out, it was a big deal. People didn't like it. And some people didn't care, but there was enough people out there that said, oh, this is crap. I'm never going to use this thing. I want my apps. I want to be able to see where things are. And now when you look at 18.04, it has the dock, and then where are your apps? You have to type in what you want. Now, we're going to have to do some research on this, but in 16.04, you have Unity. My understanding is that in 18.04, they took that out, that this is just GNOME. I don't know what the big deal is, because as far as I can tell, it looks pretty close to what you have in 16.04. I mean, there's slight differences.
Right. It does. Know. And, you know, one of the things when I was looking at the applications that they had in there, they had Gmail for GNOME. So I'm thinking you're probably right. This is GNOME, but I've never seen GNOME, so I don't know what GNOME looks like. To me, it didn't look that much different. I mean, they were just, you know, like where the box is, you know, where you log in is a little bit different. I mean, you know, but when you start clicking around in the settings and everything else, you know, I can work with it. I mean, I went from, oh my God, I don't know what I'm doing with this, to where I can actually install this on my workstation and go about my business, you know, for my labs.
You know, you brought this up and you were trying to say, well, I don't know the command line. I don't know this and that. And then, you know, this happens to everybody. When you sit down and think about what you use your workstation for, normally, what do we do? We log into our computer, we open up Chrome, and what do? We go to YouTube, we go to our email. Mm-hmm. We, you know, go to our websites that we normally go to. We check our bank account, you know, to see how much money we don't have. These are things that we do on a regular basis. So the number of applications that you really have to be able to access is like maybe 5, right? Because you have Chrome, you have your CLI, and maybe there's a few other applications you might want to have just because you want to use those.
Right.
For whatever reason. When we talk about your experience on the desktop, as long as you can access these applications, you're going to be fine.
Right. And I think I can still do my CD, my LS, you know, the commands that I have learned to be able to do certain things. Granted that when I did this, it was kind of late in the day. We were getting ready to go home and I thought, well, I'm just going to kind of click around and see how different it is. So I didn't really get into it in depth. But I did walk away feeling good about the new system, the new operating system. I think that they're trying to be, this is the impression that I got, and I could be totally wrong. But since Microsoft is all out there, I think they're trying to compete, you know, somehow or be more flexible to be more available like Microsoft is.
And you're on to something. Ubuntu has always been trying to do that. They've always tried to be more friendly than some of the other distributions out there. Like Red Hat never really cared about being super easy. Linux Mint tried to be that. But Ubuntu has always tried to figure out how to make at least the desktop side easier to work with. Like their software center, years ago they had that. And it was not very good because it didn't always work the way you wanted it to. But that's where you could go and open up this application. It was kind of like an application. And you could see all this software and it was in categories. And you could click on stuff and it would install some things. It was a little goofy. Some people had issues with it, but it kind of worked. Now on yours, you have this thing called software something. And that's where you were seeing all these different applications you could install.
Because like I said, when I didn't know anything about Linux at all whatsoever, I clicked on the Linux Mint different things. And, you know, they did have things. They, you know, they weren't like bare bone or anything. But, I mean, this thing is massive. It has 4 different application tabs of different things like media or, you know, I mean, I can't tell you the titles because, like I said, I wasn't like working with the whole thing in there, but they had a lot of applications that it seemed to me like it was trying to reach, you know, to more of the things that are going on right now.
Yeah, and they're trying to reach that wider audience.
Correct.
So that it's not just geeky people that are going to use it.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to get regular people to go in there and do something with
right.
it. And they, like I said, they've always tried to do that. Now, what's interesting is that you can have these applications in older versions. Some of them are new, but you can use apt to go and get them. The problem is you don't see them. So you have to kind of be able to know how to search for these applications on the command line or know that they're there. And you know, hey, I know that Wireshark is in here. I just have to know how to install it with the tool. Now you have this software thing. You open it up. It's graphical. You can see, oh, there it is. You click and it's installed.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't want to get away from the command line, because I think it's useful. And in a pinch where you may get into something that doesn't have a GUI and you go, oh, what do I do now? I don't want to forget my command line. But I think it was really nice to see how massive it was. But anyway, those were my thoughts. I'm still going to work on trying to figure out. First, I have to do a checklist on how to do a snapshot. I have to do a checklist on how to use CloneZilla. I have to finish my checklist on the virtual machine because we went a little too fast when it came to that. And then, of course, had to install Ubuntu.
Right. And the other thing you're going to have to do is maybe install 16.04 and then practice upgrading from 16 to 18 so you know how that process works.
Well, that's the first thing that I'm going to do on the virtual machine. I mean, you know, what I'm going to do on my workstation is going to be decided after I try to upgrade and see how it goes. And then if I do decide to upgrade my workstation instead of doing a clean install, and then I'm going to have to really do the Clonezilla, you know, or the snapshot to make sure that, you know, my data is safe and I can put it back if I need to or if I want to. But anyway, enough about me and my projects. What about you? I know you've been working on several things. There is two things to our network. We have the testing labs that are in one network, the testing network, and then we have our production network that we've been trying to kind of straighten up, revamp, update, upgrade, and do all of that. So why don't you kind of talk about some of the things that you've been working on?
So the big one is our disaster recovery plan. Now we have Backblaze B2, which is our cloud storage solution that we've gone with, and that's been working fine. But all we've really done with that is uploaded data to the cloud. Now what we're working on is figuring out how to actually recover the data so that we can use it. So one of the things I found out is that when you go to their website and you try to download a folder with more than 5 files in it, it won't let you do that. It'll say there's too many files in there. You got more than 5. You can't do that. So there's a couple of options I've found that work and let you download those files. If you're on the website, you can check off the box on the folder that you have, and you can make a snapshot. And when you make the snapshot, that turns it into one file that you can actually download. The other option is to use their command line tools to download things. I haven't tried those yet, so we're going to have to install them and see what they do. But that's a couple things that we need to figure out in order to be able to access all of our data, because we have a lot of data in there. And when we need the data, we're not going to just be looking for one or two files. We're going to want, you know, maybe hundreds of files or thousands of files. How do we download those? And then, of course, we have to go through that process of having our decryption key and the software to decrypt all that stuff, because it's all encrypted.
No, but there were some really good points about that. Having the key local, being able to decrypt the data locally as well, to where even though you send it up there, people can't see your data. To me, that was impressive. But anyway, another thing that we're working on is reorganizing our rack.
Yeah, so it's not really a server rack. I call it that, but it's more like an equipment rack. And one of the things that we've had an issue with is that we've had all these cables all over the place. And that was partly because we didn't have enough places to plug things in our devices, right? So we have a little switch on the desk or on the top of the equipment rack. And that's one you can't manage. You can't log into it. You can't create VLANs.
It's one of those plug and play.
Yeah, just a simple little switch. That needs to go away. So our main switch in the box is a Cisco 3560 with 8 ports. And then we also have our Meraki firewall with a built-in switch. So we are using that as well. But we're going to be adding another Cisco switch to our equipment rack. It's going to be another 3560, 8 port. And these are ones we got off eBay, and they work perfectly for our situation.
And they were reasonably priced.
They were.
We got 4 of them.
Right. So we got a stack of 4, and we were going to use them for a project, but we're going to borrow one and stick it in there so we can reorganize things. And then we also have another rack that you have on the desk that has Cisco equipment in there. So if we need to, we can use some of those Cisco switches as well.
Those are loud.
And that's why I bought these, because these are quiet. There's no fan. You can't hear them. They're perfect. So I'm working on that. And then I'm also going to try to add a couple of fans to the system or to the equipment rack to keep things cool. I bought a couple of them. I hope they fit. So we're going to have to try that out. And if they don't fit, we're just going to have to send them back.
See, that's one of the hardest things for me, like when I'm buying IT equipment or whatever, to try to figure out if it's going to work with what I have. That to me is mind-boggling. I'm not good at that. I have to get better at that. Anyway, what about our website? You're doing some stuff there too.
Yeah, so on the website, we're going to go to Squarespace. Mm-hmm. And the big issue I have with this is that I'm not a web person. I want to get away from managing our own web server and WordPress, because that's not secure. And I want to go to Squarespace. Now, the problem I have is that moving is not all that simple, because we have our podcast. And what I want to do is make sure that we don't lose any of our listeners. So if somebody subscribes to our podcast, they get the feed automatically. And when we have a new show, they'll automatically get that. And that's part of the feed. So what I have to do is this thing called a 301 redirect. And that sends you to the new website. but not have to play musical chairs with the domain, because we need one to go to a temporary domain, temporary website, and then we can move section9.us to the new website, and then we can then do another redirect to that, and we'll be back on section9.us.
Wow, that's a lot of work.
It's a little convoluted. I'm still not too clear about how some of that stuff's supposed to work. And then, like I said, I'm not a web person, so I'm looking at different templates on the website for Squarespace, and I think I have one picked out. And then if we don't like it at some point, we can always change that.
So what about your workstation? What kind of plans do you have for your new workstation?
You got me a new workstation. It's practically the same thing that you have. And so I need to set that up at some point. We're going to put Linux on there. It's going to also have Windows 10 on there.
So you're going to have, well, you have two SSD?
Right. So there's two SSDs in there, and one of them has Windows 10 on there. We'll have to see what version of Windows 10 that is. And then we're going to put Ubuntu, probably 18.04 on there. And then, we got to get that under my desk and get all that set up. And
then
everything.
I think we need to get extra memory too, because I wanted to get you as much memory as you got me on mine, but they didn't have it. We had to order it online. So
yeah, I think this one has 8 and yours has 32.
But no, that one has 16, I believe.
Oh, well, we'll have to check it then.
Yeah.
So that's the workstation thing I have to work on. And then we have our cloud servers. So our cloud servers are production. We have our DNS in there, and we need to make sure we maintain those and keep those safe. And sometimes, you get busy, sometimes you forget. So we need to be more consistent about making sure we keep those things safe. Because if something happens to them, no email, no website, no nothing.
Quick thing, we have a lot of equipment. We have the Wi-Fi thing that we bought or whatever, but you did buy a Palo Alto firewall, and we've been wanting to play with it. So
we just have never had time to take that thing out of the box and do something with it. So the other day I got an email saying that the renewal is up. So our licensing for the year is already over. That's just something that we just never had time to play with. So at some point we're going to have to take that out of the box and do something with it, because now I got to get a new license for it.
Right. The goal that we have, besides straightening our production network and kind of getting it revamped, labeled, cabled, secure and everything else, is to be able to use some of the equipment we invested in into our projects, into production. So, we can go and say, hey, yes, we have experience with a Palo Alto, firewall. We know how to use it. This is what we did with it, right?
Yeah. And there's just, there's just so much stuff that we're trying to do with our Raspberry Pi data center. And like I said, some of the production stuff that we have. Because, like I said, those cloud servers, if they go away, we don't have a website anymore. We don't have any email anymore. So there are some things that we're trying to do to maintain what we already have. And that maintenance process, we need to get better at making sure they get done and finding a way to make that process a little easier so that it's not taking up all of our time.
Well, and I think anybody that is in the IT business knows that you got to keep up with what you have and maintain it. You have to keep up with the new technology advancing at a fast rate. And you have to make sure that you got your documentation and you know where things are and you know what the most important data is and you have that secure. So it's a never-ending job.
Yeah. Do you have anything else?
No. You?
No, I think that's it. We have a lot of work to do, but we'll get there. If you have any comments or questions, you can email us at section9.us. And if you want to take a look at our show notes, you can go to section9.us.
Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening.